Hello, sexy nerds of the Nerd Imperium. Welcome to another episode of the Currently Nerdy Podcast. We are your inner conclave of nerdom. My name is Diz, and I'm your pop culture and sports nerd.
I'm Ali, your classic nerd.
And I'm V, I'm your comic book nerd.
Yo, I had Ali listen to some Jay-Z yesterday.
Really?
He was bumping that shit.
Were you a fan of
Jay-Z? I don't know if I was bumping anything. I did enjoy it.
I had you listen
to the story of OJ.
The story of OJ, yeah. And I showed you the video, too. You liked that, because it was like a
Interesting. It was the old Disney racist cartoons, caricatures of black people. And
you a fan of Hove?
Kind of. Well, I was surprised, because as far as I was aware, I mean, the last time I heard Jeezy's music, I think I was still in high school.
Yeah, you know, when we were high school, our senior year, the Black Album came out.
Honestly, one of my favorite albums.
And he actually, that was the album where he said, "I'm no longer making music," and then he made music like 3 years later.
Yeah.
But like, my experience with Jay-Z has always been that he's kind of a typical rapper. I wasn't particularly impressed with Jay-Z ever. I was impressed with this because it's like there's social commentary here, there's depth, there's something else.
Yeah,
maybe I just don't know Jay-Z.
This album, Jay-Z's always been more social, right?
I don't know.
But he wasn't like overt. Like Tupac was very overt. Mos Def is very overt. Talib Kweli is very overt. Jay-Z's always been like subliminal. Even like when he disses people, he takes shots subliminally. Unless he went and had Nas, and then like he did
fucked up stuff with when him and Nas were battling.
That is true. But the first shot he took was subliminal. Like the first thing he said was, "Ask Nas, he don't want it with Hove, no." And then from there, then he like
added he also confesses here in this album. Adultery.
Yeah, he confesses to cheating on Beyonce.
Isn't that what the Lemonade album was about, though? It was about the adultery?
Becky with the good
hair. Yeah, Beyonce made a reference to it with Becky with the good hair. And then, like,
I think it's Becky with the hair.
I thought it was Becky with the good hair. I don't know. Whatever. Anyways, Jay makes a line like, "You almost threw it all away for Becky," or some shit. You know, like, talking about Beyonce. And he brings that up. He brings up, like, how he's afraid that his children are going to find out that, like, he cheated one day. But he also took some shots at Kanye in there. He took some shots at Future. He took some shots at 50 Cent. He took shots at a bunch of people. He took shots at Prince's estate, like the artist formerly known as Prince.
Mm-hmm.
He took shots at their estate, claiming
what
that
they're saying?
Basically saying that they were just trying to use his death for like money and shit, and like that's not what Prince wanted.
Well, people have been really insane about this album right now.
It's a really good album. Yeah. 10 tracks, 36 minutes long, but it's really
Lemonade and this.
Yeah. I know. Well, they're kind of the royalty of music, aren't they? When you think about it, they're kind of the king and the queen.
Yep.
But also, there was... I feel like this probably happens with a lot of celebrities, where it's like, I think there's kind of an understanding that they aren't always faithful to one another.
Mm.
You know? I think... Isn't like Will Smith and
Jada Pinkett?
Aren't they in like an open relationship also or something?
That's
like,
the rumor.
Rumors about that.
There's no like... There's nothing to actually support it.
They've never actually said that.
Yeah.
So I guess I don't know, but it seems like, I mean, it seems to happen a lot with people who are really rich and powerful, where it's just like there's, you know, there's like monogamy doesn't quite affect
the same
way. I
don't know about that,
because
the reality is that monogamy doesn't seem to be a big deal with the working class.
That is true. Yeah.
I mean,
you know.
Yeah. Without a doubt, I think there's a certain sense of entitlement amongst the rich, powerful, and famous. In that they think they can get away with it more, or there's a sense of entitlement there, or maybe because they climb so high, the fall is bigger.
Mm-hmm,
but sure. I don't know if it's infidelity is any way, shape, or form more prevalent among them. Because
I guess you're right.
We've literally made shows of just catching cheaters,
desperate.
Well, I mean, there was actually
for housewives. Yeah. There's a show called Cheaters.
Yeah, that dude got stabbed that one time.
It's like literally. Yeah. You know, even culturally speaking. So I was talking to a friend of mine, and I mentioned this to you, as a friend of mine, about how notions of love are often depicted differently in different cultures.
Yeah.
So, for example, in a lot of American movies about love of some type, it usually starts off with a very similar premise.
What?
Couple in a relationship or marriage that's going nowhere, lack of life, or they're no longer feeling it, and then along comes someone, and that person ignites the passions, and they feel once more,
and they end up having an affair. And so there's never in the and what they do is they try to capture the passion, because love is defined as lust, desire, and passion in those kind of instances. And there's no particular moralizing of the fact that that person
Technically cheating.
An affair. I mean, yeah. Almost all Nicholas Sparks movies involve cheating.
Yeah, The Notebook.
The Notebook, I mean, everyone talks about it as a romantic movie. And sure, it's romantic, but she cheated on her fiancé.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who, for all intents and purposes, was a really great guy.
Yeah, he was a war hero.
Right. But she cheated on him.
I know.
Stupid and no gross. One ever goes, and, you know, at the end, you're sitting there crying for her because she ended up with the love of her life. Yeah. So you can cheat as long as you end up with the love of your life. There's another Nicholas Sparks movie I just saw recently where she has a boyfriend that is a doctor and engaged, and she ends up sleeping with her neighbor, and then she leaves her boyfriend
for Dear John neighbor. Or some shit.
No, it's not Dear John. It's the one with the Australian chick.
Carla Delevingne.
She's British.
I don't know, man.
The girl from I Am 4.
Oh, jeez. I don't remember.
And from Sorcerer's Apprentice.
I don't know.
What is her name? I don't know. What is her name? She always looks, she's like on the verge of crying.
Oh, there's a lot of...
Or Warm
lot of...
Bodies.
Warm
Bodies. Oh, the girl, the love interest in Warm Bodies, right? Yeah. Oh, jeez. I gotta
she
look
always
it up.
The, or she's always looks like she's on the verge of crying.
I haven't watched any of these movies.
You've never seen any of these? Warm Bodies is actually really good.
Is it a Teresa Palmer?
Teresa Palmer.
Okay.
She's in this movie. I forgot the name of the movie. I think it's like Something About Us. And it's with this guy. And that's literally the story. And then you go, yeah, it's cute. She ends up in like a coma and he waits for her and shit like that. But it's like, it's supposed to be a typical like, you're like, oh, are they going to get back together? Oh, no, she's in a coma. Oh, but he waited for her. He loves her, but you forget that this whole thing happens because she cheated on her boyfriend through her fiance.
Yeah.
Right? So like this is a common theme in a lot of American movies. Whereas like if you compare Bollywood movies,
yeah,
the Bollywood movies do the exact opposite, where love is defined vis-a-vis commitment.
Yeah.
Right. And so what happens is like someone will be tempted.
Uh-huh.
In a Bollywood movie.
But never go back.
They'll have like a former lover show up.
Yeah.
But they never go back. They pick usually their husband or
the
wife.
The first Bollywood movie I have ever seen was Hom Dum Dil De Chuk De Sanam. I probably pronounced that completely wrong.
Yeah, you really did.
But it was with Aishwarya Rai, Salman Khan. And the fucking guy from Chandani Chuk to China. I forgot his name.
I forgot his name too.
But you know who I'm talking about.
Yep.
But... So, no, it wasn't him. It was some random dude. Anyways, she's in love with Salman Khan, marries the other guy. Yeah. This guy that she's marrying is like at first you think he's a dick, but he's like, you know what? If you really love this other guy, then I'll help you find him and marry him.
Yeah.
And then she ends up finding him, but ends up staying with her husband because
along the journey, she falls in love with her husband. Yeah, yeah. Well, same thing. The movie Darkan, right, is actually loosely based off of Wuthering Heights.
Uh-huh.
Which is a very famous English novel in which Catherine is in love with Heathcliff but marries Linton. And while she never cheats on Linton, she never loves Linton. And when Heathcliff comes back, she desires Heathcliff. She ends up dying, and everyone dies miserably in that. It's a weird love story because no one ever actually ends up happy.
Standard English writing, yeah, standard. It seems like. Yeah. Like
everyone's miserable. Heathcliff ends up marrying someone else and being miserable. Linton is miserable. Catherine is miserable. All because Catherine chose Linton over Heathcliff, even though she wanted Heathcliff. In the Indian version, in Bollywood, in Darkan, similar story, right?
Mm-hmm.
She loves this guy, but he's poor, so she can't marry him.
Mm-hmm.
So she marries the rich guy. The poor guy goes away, comes back even richer,
uh-huh.
Buys everything in the sight.
It's like Gatsby.
Gatsby and Wuthering Heights and Darkan all have that same story.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is he tries to woo her back. And she goes, no, I choose my husband, because the husband turns out to be like this amazingly wonderful guy. And so this is why I'm talking. Like, the point about this is I think that we have a fascinating cultural idea about love and passion. So I think infidelity is still clearly very taboo,
mm-hmm.
But we have exceptions.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like you're not supposed to cheat, but there are exceptions in American culture.
I don't
culture,
know, man. Every rom-com I've seen with J-Lo, she's like the mistress.
She's the mistress, right?
The wedding planner.
Whereas...
was it the maid? What was she, the one where she was the maid?
Made in Manhattan.
You know what I'm talking about?
Fuck is this shit.
There's always an asterisk. There's always an exception.
Yeah. What about what's the Nicholas Sparks movie where he's cheating on her with a ghost?
What? The Time Traveler's Wife?
Oh, I don't know. Isn't there a ghost or something?
The Time Traveler's Wife, she's not cheating. Oh. She's cheating on him with him.
Oh.
At one point.
The fuck, how does that work?
Because she, like, cheats with his future self or some shit like that. Ooh. Or his past self.
Does that count?
I'm not sure. Apparently, because, like...
He got mad?
I mean, obviously, spoiler alert. People should... I mean, it's an old movie.
It's like 10 years old.
if it's a spoiler, you can go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
But it's at one point, like, he... Because he refuses to have a child with her.
Uh-huh.
Because he doesn't want the child to have the same affliction.
Yeah.
And so he gets a vasectomy without her knowing.
Uh-huh.
And she gets really angry. And they have a serious, massive fight. And in the fight, later at night, his younger self appears.
And they fuck. And they get pregnant.
And she gets pregnant. And so she's like, I slept with you. But it wasn't you. No. So, like, technically, yeah. The way she explained it, she had a fling.
Yeah, with him.
I feel like that is cheating.
Is that cheating? I don't know, man.
I don't know.
Because, you know, I mean, technically.
I mean, it's definitely lying and deceiving. It's maybe not be cheating.
Yeah.
In the literal sense. But you're definitely doing something shady.
Yeah.
You know, someone else to cheat. That saying where it's like, you know, it's kind of technically defined as cheating. If you're doing something that you don't feel comfortable doing in front of your significant other, you know, so if you're fucking, even if you're fucking your younger version of your significant other, and let's say it's in front of him, and he's going to be upset about it, I think it's cheating.
I don't know if it's cheating. It's definitely unfair, deceptive.
Yeah.
But this is what I find fascinating, right? Like, cultural ideas about love and how they've affected society. Or maybe they're just reflective of society. Maybe it's not, maybe you can't blame Hollywood because people are cheating. Maybe people are just dicks.
That's probably true.
And Hollywood reflects it and romanticizes it.
I feel like that's more accurate.
But I don't know about that. I think that cultural representation has a deep impact. That there's more of a dialogue of a process.
It makes it more
acceptable. Art isn't passive. Art isn't just reflection. It's also creation and innovation and shaping. I think it's a two-way street, and as a result, there's something going on in our culture where, for whatever reason, maybe because of the way we define love in lustful terms, less as because everyday love is actually quite ordinary.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, that is true.
It's boring.
It's getting up early and making sure the coffee's on.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Everyone's like, I want that excitement. Like, I don't want to be a boring
But people define it in regards to the lust excitement aspect.
Fuck that.
And so what happens when that lust excitement is gone?
Affairs.
That
boring couples.
And I guess that's also those things tend to influence the way that we think, right? I mean, you know, it's considered outlandish and ridiculous for anyone to have an arranged marriage, in our quote unquote Western society.
Mm.
But you know, I mean, it's like it's really at the end of the day is like, I mean, marriage, concepts of marriage and bonding like that, you know, they vary according to the human experience and according to culture. Yeah,
they vary throughout time, throughout space.
But like every bit, almost, I mean, I can tell you that most American movies that I've seen where there is even an idea of an arranged marriage is always looked at kind of in a negative light.
It's always, you know, always like, somewhat depressing and oppressive and sad, which I'm sure in some instances it certainly can be. But that's because I think how you define marriage and how you define love is different. And that there isn't a single unifying, as much as we'd like to think that there's a single unifying concept of love, there isn't. I actually wrote a blog post like several months back during Valentine's Day about how love is actually historicized. Like what we consider romantic love, right, that is feeling passion for someone, really comes around during the medieval era and troubadour culture that borrows from the Muslim world. The Muslim world had very strong notions of romantic love. We invented love,
brother.
Well, I argue that without Layla and Majnun, the famous story of Layla and Majnun, there would be no Romeo and Juliet. But that earlier notions of love in the Greek world and the Roman world, that was that love had multiple expressions. There was philos, which was love amongst brothers. There was agape, which is a kind of selfless love that's reinterpreted as kind of Christian love. There's eros, which is erotic love, but it's not like romantic. It's considered madness. You know, he literally poisons you with an arrow, so you would be consumed by madness.
Like obsession?
Yeah, obsession. Yeah. So it isn't until medieval culture where there's kind of a fusion of those concepts that you start to see courtly love, which is chaste, and romantic love, which is this kind of passion. But nowadays, we take romantic love as a given.
Yeah.
Like that's the standard human experience, as if the kind of ordinary daily commitment isn't real. But mm-hmm. the reality is that, you know, that's the romantic aspect fades.
True.
Yeah.
Right? Or it comes and goes. There's days where you feel romantic and there's days where you can't stand that person.
Yeah.
But the choice to stick around in of itself
is love.
Is love, right? Yeah. It's an act of love. The choice of going, I really cannot stand you right now. Mm. But I'm not going to go and fuck someone else.
Well, there was, what is it? Like
that's an act of love.
Isn't that Chris Rock did a stand-up where it's all like, if you didn't contemplate killing your partner at least twice a day or something, then you ain't in love. Like, yeah, if your wife has thought about murdering you several times already throughout your relationship.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that...
Well, I'm a firm believer, and I've given this advice in the past before, is that if you should have a solid fight a month.
Yeah, you said this before.
I've said this before.
Yeah.
I consider it very healthy.
Yeah, keeps you on your toes.
It clears the air. If you haven't had a fight that month, you should start a fight.
Yeah, over anything.
Yeah. I firmly believe it, because there's like... A lot of stuff builds up. You don't want to wait a few months, because then it gets nasty.
That's true. And then
you regret.
Every month, once a month, be like, we're going to fight.
But like not like an angry, like, I'm going to murder you fight.
Yeah, but a good, solid fight where you argue, get clear the air, get angry at each other, they get the passions going.
Yo, mama cooks better than you, woman.
Angry sex, makeup sex, good to go.
Yeah.
That's love.
Just advice from Ali.
Feels weird, you talking about sex.
I'm an expert.
Okay.
The love doctor is in.
The love doctor. Remember the naughty professor?
Yeah.
Remember that? I used to use that.
Yeah, I don't know.
The naughty professor. The love doctor. I'm here giving love advice on a Monday evening.
That's true. On Prime Day. It's Amazon Prime Day today.
What does that mean?
It means that anyone who has Amazon Prime, like they have like special sales and shit on Amazon Prime today.
On a high holy day.
Yeah.
I'm giving
That's true.
Love advice
on a Monday.
So you can go and buy that French tickler for a discounted price on Amazon if you need it.
Did you really just say French tickler?
Yeah, it's from Dumb and Dumber. You don't remember that?
No. I'm not sure what you're ordering from Amazon, but I order books.
I order beard oil.
And like, really?
Yeah, beard shampoo, beard oil. I'll buy presents for people and then send it to them.
I send presents. You know... I was thinking about this. I'm in a very contemplative mood today, clearly. I've been thinking about a lot of things.
Yeah.
The nature of...
You've had a lot of time on your hands.
I've had a lot of, you know...
School's over.
I took a week off, and then this other week I've been doing planning stuff.
Uh-huh.
And part of the planning involves thinking.
Uh-huh.
And so that naturally leads to random thoughts.
You thinking is not good.
No.
The world's going to end.
Very dangerous.
If we give you a month off to just think, someone's going to die.
There's really kind of... If the world ever ends... It's generally because someone's pissed me off by not including me in something. It's generally
fucking Pierce.
Yeah, like I tend to be quite petty about stuff.
You're
like
Pierce.
It's like when people don't include me, I'm like, all right, I see you.
Yeah,
I'm gonna fuck your life up.
Double jump.
The thing is, though, right? So long, if they invite you, you're not gonna show up.
No, I don't want to show up.
The very nature of you being included, though.
Yeah, this is a very important distinction here. I won't go.
Yeah. You just want the invitation.
But I want the fucking invitation. If you've come to that point where you're like, oh, Lee's not going to go anyways, we're going to invite him,
you're
then
dead.
Fuck you.
You're gone.
You clearly no longer appreciate my presence, and I'm going to kill you now,
but you're
and your offspring.
But What if in that off
you know
chance
what
you
it
come?
Is?
I expect you not to come, and you show up.
That sucks for you. You know what it is, too? I think it's also a disciplinary thing. It's like historians, by nature, feel underappreciated.
Okay.
Because we do a lot of fucking work.
Yeah.
We go into the archives. We spend years upon years. It's also why history books take so long to write.
Uh-huh.
We spend years upon years gathering research, analyzing it, interpreting it. You know what it is? It's a fucking giant-ass puzzle game with half the pieces missing.
Uh-huh.
And somehow we're able to kind of put something together.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then no one appreciates it.
It is what it is.
So we feel underappreciated.
You are the house moms of the working world.
Yeah. When I feel left out, I want to kill people or boredom. That's the second one.
That's
like if I'm bored, I go okay. If I was going to commit
arson,
mass slaughter.
Oh, okay. You go take it to that level.
How would I get away with it?
Look how our minds think.
Or if I were to, coup d'etat, how would I do this?
You're gonna call for a jihad on Donald Trump?
Oh, God. So you know what I mean?
I stand
with Linda.
Okay, you know what I mean, though, right? So, like, boredom is a very dangerous thing for me. They used to This was also very. This was what happened at school too. It's like whenever I got bored,
you'd start riots.
I usually tended to cause mischief.
Yeah.
And so it's like never let Ali get bored because
give you a coloring book at all times.
Give me a coloring book. Yeah. Give me a book. Any book. Yeah. I'm good for hours on end. I'm like,
oh, here you go, sir.
This is an interesting
book. Here's some colored pencils and a coloring book.
I'm gonna read about orangutans. Just, you know. So anyways, I was thinking the other day.
Okay.
But wait, what was this conversation going?
Amazon Prime. Shopping, beard oil?
Shopping, that's gifts. What it was. Shopping. Gifts and shopping. Yeah. I was thinking the other day about how difficult it is to buy gifts for some people.
Yeah, it's true.
And I think that those people shouldn't get gifts.
This is true.
So I love my mother.
Oh, yeah, don't ever give her gifts.
But never buy.
Just give her cash.
Because every time I've bought something for my mom,
she exchanges it.
She's either exchanged it or she's like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah, right.
So I bought her jewelry before. She's like, oh, what am I going to do with this? Like, wear it.
Yeah,
I've bought her a massage before. She never used it.
Yeah. What is massage?
She's like, I'm not letting people touch me. It's weird. I've bought her perfume, clothes. She changes it. She exchanges it. She loves cash.
Uh-huh.
Just give her hard cash. She's good. She's good to go.
I feel like that's actually my family, too, where it's like, oh, I bought my mom, like, scented soap before.
Yeah.
You know, she's all like, all right. Well, here, put it in your shower. I was like, well, that
defeats the purpose.
I was 11 years old when that happened.
You're like, this is for you know? You,
so I'm
not
like,
me.
I bought this for Mother's Day for you. And she's like, here, just take it so you can use it.
You know who's appreciative of my gifts? My grandmother. I buy her perfumes and she wears them because she's an old lady, so she likes wearing perfumes. I bought your dad cologne one time. He never wore it.
He only wears one cologne.
Yeah.
Eternity.
For men.
Yeah. Well, I bought him a nice, like, Yves Saint Laurent cologne. He
literally hasn't changed in 30 years.
This is true. And then he tried to convince me that he was wearing it, and I went to the bathroom. I see it's still eternity. In the box. Yeah. Like, it's still in the box. Dude, I didn't buy you Eternity. I bought you something.
No, he only wears Eternity. Yeah. And Eternity is a really old man, musky cologne.
It's
really
weird.
I got him a nice one to help him smell nicer and fresh.
I'm like, Dad, you smell like the 1980s.
Is that when Eternity like came out? It was like a 90, like a classically like 90s, like early 90s cologne.
Trying to get him into the 2010s. He wasn't feeling it. He just left it. I don't even think he smelled it.
No.
He just left the box in the bathroom.
Yeah, so my mom's tough to buy for. And I was thinking, I'm actually a very easy person to buy gifts for.
Just buy you a book and tea.
Yeah, just buy me a book. Any type of tea, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
Literally, just go to the bookstore and be like, this is something he'd read.
Yeah.
I'm like, ooh. I just get delighted with my books.
What if it was an Ann Coulter book?
I'd burn it.
Yeah, you know you wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't.
He doesn't burn books.
I don't.
He does, though. He does this thing. When we used to go to Barnes & Noble a lot. He used to always, every time he saw anything, he would just like turn it around.
Or I'd cover it with other books.
The problem is, though, he would like turn it around and there'd be like a bigger picture of Ann Coulter on the back. So he would scream and then he would put something else in front of it. Yeah, like,
Ann Coulter is the end result of the satanic cult of republicanism. It's like when you sell your soul, you end up looking like Ann Coulter. There's actually a fascinating, quite sexist image that shows Tommy Lahren, Ann Coulter, and then Kellyanne Conway, and it goes the progressions of conservative women.
The evolution. Eventually, you turn into Skeletor.
You start off with Tommy Lahren and you end up with Kellyanne Conway. Horribly misogynistic and sexist, yet not entirely inaccurate.
You turn it into Ann Coulter.
You know what it is? It's like eventually all the hate and venom that you spew starts to reflect on the outside.
Mm. Wasn't she dating like a black dude or a Muslim guy for a while?
Who?
Tommy
Lahren?
Ann Coulter.
No, Ann Coulter. She
Ann
had
Coulter
a,
had a Democratic.
Yeah, he was like a hardline Democrat too.
The hell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you realize that at the end of the day, when it comes to politics, the parties really are just for show.
Yeah.
And most of these political pundits, they don't get along behind the scenes.
True.
Kellyanne Conway, when we were talking about her today, she was on Chris Cuomo, where she had like a mental breakdown and seizure before everyone.
Yeah.
She actually has deep respect for Chris Cuomo, and Chris Cuomo has deep respect for her. They're friends. They've known each other for years. But when the cameras are rolling,
they gotta pretend.
They play the role. Right?
Then they realize that the money all comes from the same place, and they all get rich off of it.
Yeah,
it's just a matter of choosing the
CNN
side.
CNN gets what they want out of it. Fake news dudes get what they want. There's a reason Donald Trump calls CNN fake news. That hasn't stopped him from sending someone to CNN.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's like at the end of the day, too, like Jeffrey Lord's a piece of shit, right? But they put him on there because he creates memes.
I mean, day after day, people have called for the firing of Jeffrey Lord because he says all sorts of stupid-ass shit.
Yeah.
But why is he still on there?
Because he's Steve
Why Bashi. Is it that the news organization that claims that they're looking for the truth and that supposedly is very critical of Donald Trump has more Trump surrogates than any other surrogate?
True.
Right? Why is Scotty Nell Hugh on there? Why is what's her face on there? What is it? Kelly? Not Kellyanne, the other one. Kaylee McEnany. Yeah. Why is Jeffrey Lord on there? Why did they literally hire the guy, Jason Miller, who was the deputy director of communications?
Yeah.
Right? So that's the reality of it. That technically, behind closed doors,
they're all the same.
They're all the same. Republicans, Democrats, they get along just fine.
They're just putting on this facade. They're wearing their masks.
Well, they play the game of politics. Yeah.
Mm. I think you told me, too, there was a story where it's like after Anderson Cooper and like Kellyanne Conway had like a particularly heated debate, like they went and had a beer afterwards.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Like
there was totally something fun.
Yeah, something crazy like that. But there was also that. There was that clip where it was Jeffrey Lord and then Anderson Cooper was all like, you know, if President Trump like shit on a desk or something, you'd mm-hmm. still defend him, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, yeah. you know, and everyone was. I think John Oliver was like praising him for saying that. But at the end of the, you know, but
he continues to have Jeffrey Lord on his show,
and it made no difference at the end of the day. It's like everyone's all pro Anderson Cooper because of that shit, right? But nothing really changed.
Nope.
You know, so it's really. I mean, at the end of the day, it's all smoke and mirrors, man.
It's all a facade.
It's all entertainment.
Yeah.
That's what it is. But
speaking of entertainment.
Ooh, I was highly entertained this weekend. Yeah. I watched a movie I didn't think I would enjoy.
Yeah.
I watched a Spider-Man, the homecoming of the Spider-Man.
This is a high school version of him.
Yeah.
He's 15. And they actually go to homecoming.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, he's 15 in it. Spoiler alert time. If you haven't seen the Spider-Man, fuck off, come back in about 30 minutes when we're ending the podcast. But we're going to talk Spider-Man now. But you watched it too, right?
I did.
Yeah. What did you think?
I really enjoyed it. I appreciate the fact that they took someone who actually made... I mean, Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they almost seemed too old to me when I was watching those Spider-Man movies, whereas like Tom Holland really kind of hits that like proper age group, I think. And he also has an interesting little like neurotic enthusiasm that I feel like Peter Parker really, really kind of exemplifies.
Yeah. Dorky.
Yeah.
Enthusiasm.
You know, and they have like, you know, like the him and his friend are doing like the, you know, like they're interested in Legos. They want to do Lego Death Star and everything in there, which I thought was great. And I also thought it was, what they did was they actually brought back kind of what Spider, like the main core of what makes Spider-Man so special, in my opinion, mm-hmm. is that, you know, they talked about how it's like Spider-Man originally was supposed to be kind of the representative of like the that kid who felt like he was insignificant had the ability to do great things, right? Mm-hmm. And then they kind of brought it back to that in this one because it's like Peter Parker in this movie, you know, like, you know, at the end, you know, at the end he gets the suit taken away and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like he's actually saving, you know, the city wearing the hoodie and the stuff that he made in his own bedroom.
Yeah.
So I think that was really powerful imagery because it kind of shows it's like you don't need that big fancy Tony Stark suit to be who you are.
Yeah.
Right. So it brought a really interesting aspect that I think was kind of lost in the Spider-Man movies over the past couple years.
Yeah. It wasn't like super like sciency. And I also like that there was no like,
it wasn't super sciency.
Yeah. Cause it didn't have this, you know, like he had to make this like insane suit and this and that. Like, he was just like this kid kind of like practicing
that's kind of a shame because technically Peter Parker is brilliant.
No, he is brilliant. He's like the smartest guy in their team's decathlon, like academic decathlon team. And he's sitting there practicing like
well, I mean, making webs. To be fair, he does like there's a tracker on the suit that Stark puts in there. He takes the tracker out, you know, like he does, you know, he does all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Right?
But yeah, they don't follow him. I didn't see the movie.
Yeah.
I have absolutely zero intentions of seeing the movie.
Why?
You know, one, I've seen enough Marvel movies. I think I need a break for a while from
superhero
movies.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to watch any superhero movies until Infinity War.
Yeah. Did Doctor Strange do that for you?
Yeah, I was kind of done.
You didn't watch Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
No.
You didn't watch the first one, did you?
I watched the first
one. Oh, you did watch the first one.
We watched the first one together.
Yeah, I watched the first one together.
Oh. Yeah.
The second one,
it's good. I like it.
So, for me, I think, when I watched the trailer and I saw that Tony Stark had given him the suit, I thought that was the most disappointing bit for me because it attributes all of kind of Spider-Man's great accomplishments and skills with the suit to Tony Parker.
Tony Stark.
Tony Parker's basketball player.
Nice.
Yeah.
Whereas I said, originally it's Peter Parker that does all of that himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Through trial and error, through messing up.
Well, that's the thing. So at one point,
it's actually what I enjoyed about The Amazing Spider-Man.
Stark takes away his suit and goes, because he goes, I need this suit. I'm nothing without it. He's like, if you're nothing without the suit, then you don't deserve the suit. So then he goes back to wearing his hoodie and like his own mask and stuff.
Yeah, he ends up defeating Vulture.
Yeah,
using his old his own hoodie thing.
Yeah,
like his own man-made suit.
One point he's like,
and his webs.
Yeah, one point he almost like gets killed by Vulture, and he plays the flashback of, you know, if you're nothing without the suit, you don't deserve the suit. And then he musters up the energy to lift the building off of him. But I don't know. I did
as well.
He had the building collapse on him, so he lifted it. But there was like little things.
He just randomly threw in. He lifts a building
as if you do.
Oh, he's fighting Vulture. By the way, he stops to weightlift. He's not a very good storyteller. Let's just point that out. Wow. There was like a non sequitur there.
Yeah,
where he lifts a building. Wait, hold on.
Yeah, he lifted it.
Clarify the purpose of lifting a building. It was because that seems unnecessarily violent on his end.
It had collapsed on him.
Okay, thank you. But the reason I also don't want to watch it is because
you're racist.
I'm tired of the Spider-Man movies in particular.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, no, there's
so many of them.
That's true. I mean, this is like the sixth or seventh.
And then
one
we
now.
Had a. I mean, we grew up with Tobey Maguire.
Sixth one.
Sixth.
Yeah. Tobey Maguire and
Garbage.
I thought those were the. I know that people have like the weird nostalgia over sausage finger Tobey Maguire.
Mm. Fuck Tobey Maguire.
But he really was the worst Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
He's not Peter Parker. He's not Spider-Man. He also has a weird way of speaking. Has anyone noticed that about
him? Yeah, he's fucking deadpan monotone. He's a piece of shit.
He does this like he like sucks his lips in when he talks, and so he tucks his chin inwards.
Yeah,
when he talks,
he does that weird smile thing too.
Yeah, I don't know. He talks like this.
Yeah,
I don't know why he does that.
But for those of you couldn't, I just can't
pantomime.
See. Yeah, he just like.
I wonder, like when he does that, I just want to. Punch him in his missing chin.
But he just kind of does that in every movie role, though.
He plays Tobey Maguire. I don't think I've ever seen a Tobey Maguire movie
where he's not Tobey Maguire.
Where he's unrecognizable.
But he was Tobey Maguire in Seabiscuit.
Where you walk away going, my God,
yeah.
What an actor.
He was the worst part of Gatsby.
I feel like he was the weakest part of Gatsby.
Yeah, he was a
horror. Who did he play? He played the fucking Gatsby's friend. And
what's fascinating, too, is like he's actually really close friends with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, they're
And if I'm not mistaken, Leonardo DiCaprio's the one that got him the Spider-Man job.
I think so.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was like, oh, there's this thing you should try it out. Not like he owes a success. Tobey Maguire was already relatively well-established.
Yeah.
But like he's like, oh, there's this audition, you should check it out.
Yeah,
for the but Spider-Man. I hated those Spider-Man movies.
Yeah.
And then especially...
Spider-Man 3.
Where he becomes Venom.
Ah, that's the worst.
Oh, the third one. No one liked that one. Because he starts dancing.
He does... Because, I mean, I think their idea of a confident Peter Parker and the normal world's idea of confidence didn't quite...
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not sure who told Sam Raimi that confident meant emo hair, buttoned up, and...
Swinging and jazz.
Swinging
yeah.
as you,
yeah.
as you like,
yeah.
like yeah. I'm not sure who told Sam Raimi that meant cool, but they lied.
I think that's the classic Sam Raimi cheese, though, right? Like that's the kind
I
of his.
I don't know. I mean, there's cheese, and then there's. I think they legitimately thought that was cool.
That's that.
They might have.
That's some of that Azumazu cheese that you eat.
Somehow, women were like drawn to him, and I'm like, no.
Fuck out of here.
No. So I actually prefer The Amazing Spider-Man.
I didn't watch that shit.
I don't think Garfield is a good Peter Parker, though.
No, he's not. He's a fat cat that eats lasagna.
He's too...
I caught that. I like that reference. he's perplexed.
No, I get it.
No, he's like perplexed that you said that shit, and he's just like mad.
No, I'm not perplexed.
You look like you got a mad face.
He's too emo.
Yeah.
And angsty.
Yeah.
And a little too cool to be Peter Parker.
Yeah. No, I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, he's got the cool look. Yeah.
He is cool. I mean, like, if you think about it, he was a skateboarder in that movie. I understand why they tried to do that. They're trying to kind of re-up or reimagine Peter Parker in a more contemporary fashion.
Mm-mm.
Right? But it doesn't work because in today's society, the awkward emo kid is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, well, like, in, was it 21 Jump Street?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, where it's like Jonah Hill's character
suddenly becomes cool.
Yeah.
And whereas Channing Tatum's guy is like the nerd.
Yeah. Exactly. So I thought he was a terrible Peter Parker. A phenomenal Spider-Man, though.
I don't know, man.
Because his snarky personality.
It works.
Which doesn't work outside the suit. Because Peter Parker outside the suit is really dorky.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be the everyman. He's a nerd. He's always running late. He's always running into people. Uh-huh. He's kind of clumsy. He's snarky, but in a like a lovable, nice way. In the suit, though, that snark was right on point.
Yeah.
He was very much Spider-Man.
Well, I think Tom Holland had, he had that too. It actually wasn't snark. It was more this like enthusiasm.
Yeah, I like that. Tom Holland was my favorite interpretation of Peter Parker.
Well, because in Civil War, he's funny.
Uh-huh.
He's probably one of the funnier parts of the movie.
Yeah.
Not that I've seen the movie. I've seen the clips.
Yeah.
I refuse to give Marvel my money until Infinity War comes out.
Well, at least it's not your Civil like grudge
War,
against Netflix.
Civil War came out before the Doctor Strange. You know that, right?
Well, I made an exception for Doctor Strange.
Yeah, you didn't watch it because you were against America, specifically Captain America.
I hate Captain America.
Reza schooled you.
You know, Reza is wrong. Like, anything Reza says, shout out to you, Reza. Anything Reza says is generally wrong because he's a contrarian who likes holding contrarian opinions.
He was right.
He's a hipster trying to reclaim being a hipster. He's like an intellectual hipster. So like now that everyone hates Captain America, he's like, Captain America's the best superhero. No, shut up. He's not. He's a walking fucking propaganda flag. That's what he is.
Captain America's dope.
Anyways, so.
Hater ass.
I hate Captain America.
Hating ass.
Don't mind Reza, but I hate Captain America. Let's clarify that. Whereas I thought that he was quite funny in Civil War.
Yeah.
I thought he was entertaining.
There's a nod to Civil War in this one. But he's not, video recording the whole thing.
But he's not as... Because Spider-Man in his suit, what he's famous for is one-liners.
Yeah.
He throws them out there. And they tend to be quite snarky and funny. Because he's actually not talking to who he's dealing with.
Uh-huh.
He's technically talking to you. But he's not breaking the fourth wall.
He's not like a Deadpool, yeah.
He's not doing a Deadpool. But it's the same commentary. Right, he's your thoughts. He's your sarcasm. He's your kind of quip. So that's why I thought Andrew Garfield was a really good Spider-Man.
I don't know. I like Tom Holland's version. I liked. It was funny because in the beginning of the movie, like you,
Tom Holland is also actually genuinely relatively young, right?
Yeah, he's like 15. 20. No, in the movie, he's 15, but in real life, Tom Holland's like 20, right?
Because Garfield was late 20s when he played.
Yeah,
and Garfield is like 33 now.
Yes.
He's one of those fuckers like
that never ages.
That never ages. Like Emma Stone's been playing high school characters for years.
Yeah, she's like my age.
Yeah. What's like Superbad like came out like 10 years ago now.
Yeah. No,
almost 10 years ago.
She's in her late 20s. I think she's 30 now.
No, I think she's 30.
She's 28, 29.
Whatever 29, it is. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
But she always plays high school characters.
Yeah. Yeah. There's actually characters that I recognize in there. There's a guy named Mac Gargan who is the Scorpion, I think, in the comics. There's also Donald Glover plays Aaron Davis.
Yeah, Donald Glover was in the movie. That was dope.
When did that happen?
He was just kind of in there because he was like trying to buy weapons from Vulture or from Vulture's guys.
Yeah.
You know, he plays a guy named Aaron Davis is a Prowler in the comics. He's like this guy who creates his own suit to try to be a villain, but Spider-Man actually eventually convinces him to be a good guy instead.
Hmm.
And in this movie also, it's like he's technically a criminal, but it's like he actually helps Spider-Man.
Right.
Now, the original Spider-Man was actually done by Fox, right?
No, Sony. It's always been Sony.
It's only been Sony. Yeah.
This is also Sony.
This is also Sony.
Yeah, but it's like they parlayed the deal with Marvel.
Whereas Fox is not.
Whereas Feige was the producer in this one. Kevin Feige was the producer.
Is it Feige or Feige?
Feige. Kevin Feige.
Yeah. And also, John Francis Daly was one of the writers for the script. The guy Sweets from Bones.
Huh.
He was also in Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah, he's people don't recognize. He's actually behind the camera a lot.
Yeah.
People go, whatever happened to him? He's actually involved in like a 1,000 different projects, but he's just behind the camera.
Yeah, very talented. Much more talented than people give him credit
also
for.
Also another one of those perpetually fucking young.
Yeah, he always plays young guys and everything, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when he was in Bones, he was in his 20s.
They always made fun of him for being very so young. Yeah.
I appreciate this one. I typically don't like
this Spider-Man. You're not a Spider-Man guy.
But I appreciate this one.
We've gone over the fact that you've had an unusual traumatic sexual encounter with Spider-Man.
It's true.
In your youth.
I refuse.
It affects your psyche.
I refuse to confirm that. That's not true.
I'm almost 100% sure we confirmed that there was some type of anal probing. That
there was no anal probing, you son of a bitch. We've
actually confirmed over several episodes.
No.
Of anal probing?
I've tried to fight Spider-Man in Hollywood, those fucking bastards. Or two.
So you think, in regards to casting, Tom Holland worked?
I think Tom Holland worked amazing. Well, I think
in general, Marvel and the comic book movies had done a decent job picking people.
Have they had a fail yet?
I think the fail was Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, no. But that was before the Marvel.
No, I think this raises the question of not just what are good casting choices, but also how casting choices shape the character too. Because if you think of Tony Stark, right?
Mm-hmm.
Robert Downey Jr. actually doesn't play Tony Stark.
Plays Robert Downey Jr.
He plays Robert Downey Jr. Because Tony Stark in the comic books and V's talked about this in previous.
He's like an alcoholic.
He's an alcoholic, and not just an alcoholic.
He's like a somber, depressing one.
There's a dark side to Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Whereas he's much more charismatic and charming and big, larger than life.
Yeah. Even when he's dark, he's fucking charismatic.
He plays him as the giant playboy, but like a charismatic playboy, and in many ways that's shaped the character, right? Mm-hmm. And we've seen this before, how movies shape the comic books. Wolverine's healing factor is an example of that. The movies really influenced the comic books in regards to that. So I think casting choice, there's two kind of questions. It's like, are there bad casting choices in comic book movies? And two, how have certain casting choices shaped our ideas about that superhero?
Yeah, like for me, Chris Evans, him being Captain America.
He was also Human Torch, though.
Yeah, he was. And he was also one of the guys from The Losers, too. He was...
Which is interesting because the Human Torch character is so different from his Captain America.
It's true.
Yeah, as a Johnny Storm's got that like arrogant young guy thing,
which Captain is actually America. More aligned to what Chris Evans usually plays.
Yeah, yeah. But like,
remember what his breakout role was in Not Another Teen Movie?
Yeah, but back before he had abs.
Yeah, when he had a little black baby hair.
Yeah,
a little chubbier. And then he was in Cellular.
He wasn't that chubby. He was pretty ripped in that movie.
But a little bit chubbier.
He wasn't as cut as he is now. Yeah.
I don't know, and he was in Cellular. He was running around with that shit, like that old Nokia phone for hours. I don't know how the fuck the battery life lasted on that. But, I can't see anyone else playing Captain America.
He plays Captain America as slightly more...
mature?
Yeah, he's not mature, but he's like...
stoic?
He's more, you know, because Captain America in the comic books is almost just a pure symbol.
Uh-huh.
Sure, he's got his human foibles and all that, but in general, he's just kind of a symbol.
Uh-huh.
Whereas this Captain America is far more human.
Yeah.
He's got love interests. There's love interests in the comic books too, don't get me wrong. Right? But there's something different. There's a more idealized version.
Of this one?
Yeah, in the
Yeah, the way movies. That Chris Evans plays him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't see anyone else playing him. Like, it's shaped it. And then even... like going back to the MCU, he doesn't
do a particularly good job. I mean, he's not like a depth of character.
Captain America is not a hard character. I mean, Chris Evans is built like a comic book character. He's just a tall, cut white guy with a square face.
But he built bulked up to play.
Yeah, but right. I mean, you can find that it's no different from Ryan Reynolds being the atypical comic book build also, or even guys like Chris Hemsworth. I mean. Yeah. You know, I can easily fit them into that mold of Captain America. I think
Chris Hemsworth's another good choice for
Thor.
He was a good Thor, yeah.
Yeah.
But
because Thor has a temper, especially early on in the comic books. He does the anger really well.
Yeah, he's good.
But the kind of like he's not overly clever. Yeah. He's not dumb, but like this, you could tell this is a man who's survived off of his strength.
Yeah.
So there's this like slight bemusement. Like he's slightly amused/confused.
Mm.
And that's he does that. I think Chris Evans does that really well.
Well, he does. You know what Thor is really funny is that in the first movie when he screams at Odin, he's like, "You're a fool." Like the way that he says it is really. Yeah. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
It's like he's got marbles in his mouth or something. Like,
well, I mean, Anthony Hopkins also responds with like,
you want to talk about comic books changing or the portrayals of the movies changing the comic books? Nick Fury. Originally was played by David Hasselhoff, and now he's a black dude.
Wait, what do you mean he was played by Disney?
David Hasselhoff played Nick Fury in an old Nick Fury movie.
Yeah.
It was David Hasselhoff.
But, I mean, other than the fact that they made him black in the movies.
And it's like, has no hair.
Yeah, they made him black in the comic books. They made him Samuel L. Jackson in the comic books now. They changed it.
It depends. Nick Fury doesn't really exist right now in the comic books, I think.
Well, Nick Fury's always kind of confusing in the comic books. You're not quite sure if he's immortal, if it's really a title.
He just kind of shows up. And the thing is, though, he has all those nanobots, or he's got all of those... It's like the bots that are like that are fakes, like Doom bots. Mm-hmm. So every time Nick Fury dies, you don't really know if he's dead or just like a random robot that they killed.
You know, it doesn't work. That Olsen chick playing Scarlet Witch.
Yeah,
I don't like it.
Yeah, like her.
I like her.
Her accent goes in and out. That's what it is. Weird.
She's a great actress.
Yeah.
In other movies,
yeah.
She doesn't quite fit Scarlet Witch. Also, because Scarlet Witch is very different in the movies than she is in the comic books.
Yeah, she's crazy.
In the comic books, her relationship with her father is a very important part of her character.
Uh-huh.
Right, her and Pietro, both of their relationships with Daddy.
Yeah, Daddy
is a defining character of who they are. Pietro is kind of the spoiled brat, always looking for Dad's approval. He approves of her more than he does of him.
Yeah.
But there's still a weird tension there.
Was it Aaron Johnson that played Quicksilver? The guy who played Kick-Ass played Quicksilver, too?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. That wasn't a good one, either. I like
he didn't play... He didn't actually really have a real good role in there anyway. He was kind of a throwaway character.
And he didn't actually play Quicksilver.
Yeah, he just played a guy who was fast.
Neither Peter Evans' character, or whatever his name is.
Evan Peters.
Really?
His character isn't Quicksilver either.
Pietro Maximoff in the comic books is this, like, there's a
privileged,
certain,
spoiled.
Yeah, and there's a little regalness about him because he's Magneto's son. Like, there's
also really buff.
He's like arrogant. Yeah,
he's because he's arrogant, fast. Privileged they think prick. Like, he's actually quite big built. He's like Magneto, but fast but slightly whiny and cowardly.
Yeah, but he's got that arrogance about him, right? And that's kind of the
important aspect. He's spoiled. He's cowardly, but he is quite arrogant.
Yeah. And then Wanda Maximoff is like there's a part of her that's very maternal,
mm-hmm.
right? But that maternalness also is the reason why she goes crazy because of her children.
There's a part of madness.
Right? Yeah. So and then it's also between that and her powers, right? Uh-huh. That only affect the way that she thinks. She's manic. You know, like there's a lot of interesting issues there that Elizabeth Olsen doesn't portray, or they don't bother kind of putting into the whole thing. But then, you know, Vision and Wanda Maximoff are lovers in the comic books as well, and you know they're kind of bringing that in, which I find is very interesting.
Yeah, the Olsen chick doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I don't know about Paul Bettany as Vision. You know, like
I'm not sure. They haven't developed it enough for me to make an opinion about
it. I like Paul Bettany as Vision.
Vision is slightly different also
in
the comic books.
Yeah.
Well, because they turn... Jarvis in the comic books is a butler.
Yeah.
He's an actual butler.
Yeah, he's an actual butler. But Jarvis in the movies is the program. AI.
Yeah.
And then Jarvis becomes Vision.
Yeah.
Which, I'm not sure. But, you know... And also, like, Happy Hogan... John Favreau's Happy Hogan...
is different than the regular
Happy Hogan. Happy Hogan in the comic books isn't this crazy character. He's just, like, stalwart... former boxer, kind of this tough man of the streets type guy.
Uh-huh. But was he like that in the first movie?
He was more so, yeah. Not so much in this one.
Yeah, and even in the second one, that's when fucking Black Widow came in.
Yeah.
I think
the MCU does a better job about casting the actors for their
roles. They do a really good job.
Better than, say, Fox, who did, who put Olivia Munn as Psylocke, which didn't fit.
Totally ruined Psylocke's character.
Yeah.
I rewatched that movie.
Why would you?
And I gotta say that it was... I hated it even more.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched it twice. It was garbage.
Because I went there and I went, none of these characters, first of all, way to kind of ruin some of our favorites.
Yeah.
Archangel.
Storm. Most powerful mutant, worshipped as a goddess. Her power is... It really comes from Apocalypse. Like, really? Yeah. Just...
Although the actress, I don't remember her name. Her look looks like kind of that.
Yeah, the look
old,
is cool.
The
thing that frustrated me is, like, if when you actually watch that movie, Oscar Isaac's horrible decision for...
Didn't make sense as an Apocalypse.
Not at all. They couldn't decide whether they wanted to go with Megalomaniac or Cult Leader Apocalypse. They couldn't figure it out. They had a Schizophrenic Apocalypse.
Yeah.
But what was horrible about the movie, like, technically none of those characters, none, have any justification or reason to go with Apocalypse.
That's true.
So she takes on Storm for no reason. Storm is a thief. She's just there.
Yeah.
And he saves her. Why would she decide that she's going to go on a genocidal mission?
Yeah, makes no sense.
Right?
Yeah.
Psylocke. The scene with Psylocke is one of the worst. She pulls out her little
On Caliban.
On 2 seconds later, she's like, I can help you find those mutants. Like,
yeah,
wait,
why would
you
do that? Yeah.
Why are you joining Apocalypse? He's literally done nothing, shown you no indication of who he is or what, but you've suddenly decided that
they even made Caliban. Like, they didn't even do Caliban particularly accurately in that movie either.
Right.
Well, they didn't do it in Logan either. Caliban wasn't like that in the comics.
Caliban is ostracized. He's part of the Morlocks.
And he speaks in a weird way. He's kind of like this. And then eventually... He speaks
slowly, too.
Eventually, he joins with X-Force, and, everyone likes him. Warpath is a big,
He's not a bad guy.
Yeah, and it's like, it's just... He's just kind of this awkward fringe character that can detect mutants, and then they kind of take him under the wing, but he was, too... They made him, slimy.
Yeah.
You know, he's, this backdoor shenanigans,
dealer. Yeah, I never quite understood that.
Didn't make any sense.
The whole movie was not... It was horribly written. And then the casting choices, I think, were really...
The only good thing that they've done, legit good thing that they've done, is Fassbender and McAvoy.
I think Fassbender and McAvoy were brilliant because not only can you... Though McAvoy is a little iffy.
Fassbender's amazing as Magneto.
Fassbender, you can almost see him, especially around the eyes...
Mm-hmm.
Look like Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
Like a younger Ian McKellen.
It really goes to his talent.
He does such a phenomenal job. McAvoy, I think because he's trying to do his own thing and not be Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
He's a good actor.
Yeah.
But he's a different Professor X.
What do you think about Jennifer Lawrence's Mystique?
A horrible decision.
Yeah.
Horrible decision. They cast Jennifer Lawrence because
She's
Jennifer Lawrence. She's the big thing now. And then they give her a role that has nothing to do with what Mystique is like.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that they've retconned some of this, but how do you explain the fact that she was raised by Xavier and then she nearly kills him in the first one?
Yeah.
They don't recognize one another as family in the first one, the very first X-Men.
Yeah.
How do you explain that? It
doesn't make any sense.
It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then they give her this role, because she's Jennifer Lawrence, they give her this prominent role as the main character. Yeah.
Which I think is weird, too, because they made the Mystique character in the movies into this revolutionary woman type
she's
thing.
Not that. Where she's always not, a backhanded, sneaky...
That's what I think. It's like she's literally... Her power is literally conducive of backhanded... sneaky work.
Mm-hmm.
And then they made her into this revolutionary general
thing. Whenever Apocalypse shows up, she has sided with Apocalypse.
Yeah, she just goes with whatever works for her.
But somehow now she's
don't
hold back.
Yeah. I didn't mind both Nightcrawlers that they did.
No, I thought the second Nightcrawler was a bad decision. The first Nightcrawler was all right. The young kid, Cody McPhee, whatever his name is or whatever.
Are you thinking of Beast?
No.
No.
The guy who played... The new Nightcrawler, skinny kid. That wasn't a German accent.
That's true.
He sounded Indian at times.
Yeah, it wasn't all that.
The other guy was, what's his name? Alan Cummings or something that played Nightcrawler.
Yeah, the other guy.
Yeah, the British dude.
I thought he did quite well.
He's a good actor, though.
This guy, and I'm not saying this one was bad.
Yeah.
But, the accent was so atrocious. He spoke with it. There was moments where I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's an Indian accent.
Well,
that's
not even remotely. Sophie Turner's accent. As Jean Grey was.
Yeah,
wait a second.
But you gotta hand it. The British do American accents better than we do British accents.
Tom Holland's a perfect example.
Yeah.
People don't know that Tom Holland is British.
Yeah, I didn't know for a while either. I was like, holy shit, he's really good. And
Andrew Garfield's British too.
Andrew Garfield. Well, he's half.
But he's got a British accent.
Yeah, he's
only half his accent's British.
He's Lily Collins. They're called something else. They're called.
I don't know.
Not bilingual, by something.
Sexual?
No. But what it means is they can literally shift their accent based off how comfortable they are where they are.
Did you like...
what's her name? Does that? Gillian Anderson from X-Files?
Uh-huh.
She, if you ever see her interview in Great Britain, she speaks with an English accent, and quite a posh English accent.
Yeah.
To the point where people go, this is faked.
Yeah.
Because it's very, very posh. No, very few British people actually even talk like that. Yeah. It's RA. It's, which is the King's English.
Yeah, what do you think of Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange? Do you think
Stephen Strange. I don't know.
The problem is, I think the problem with that, though, is the movie itself, I didn't find to be particularly good.
Yeah.
You know, is the question is if Benedict Cumberbatch would have done a good Doctor Strange if I enjoyed the script and the movie itself.
Yeah.
You know, that's yeah. You know, I could see Benedict Cumberbatch being in Stephen Strange. I can't think of another actor off the top of my head that would fill the role of Stephen Strange right now.
I thought the second Beast,
Nicholas Holt.
He's British too, no?
Not bad.
I know, but it's
not
like,
quite Beast.
I feel like Kelsey Grammer did a really good job.
A really surprisingly good job, because Beast has a jovial side.
Yeah, right? Kelsey Grammer did that good.
He's always reciting something.
Yeah, he's always...
And he's always optimistic.
And he's always upside down reading a book.
Whereas I thought he's a little angsty. There were certainly humor moments with with the Nicholas Holt,
yeah,
where
yeah.
he was funny,
mm-hmm.
especially in his interactions with people,
yeah.
like with Mystique or with Professor X. But yeah. he was also a little bit more awkward, teen shy, and maybe it's because he's playing such a younger Beast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right. But even in Apocalypse, he's a grown up at that point.
Yeah, right? I wish they would have given him like this more poetic.
He's too reserved, yeah. whereas Beast is a larger than life.
Yeah,
character.
There's yeah. something. Yeah, like you said, jovial. I think jovial is actually the best word.
Yeah, to jovial, kind of, genial. He's kind of big. He likes to quote things. He pats you on the back.
Yeah, he's kind of goofy, but like
in he's a, also his. He's got self-deprecating humor, which is what makes him really great.
Yeah, well, I think Hank McCoy in the comics at one point when he's younger actually works in the circus too.
Yeah.
So like, there's like a showmanship about the way that he does things. Like Kurt, the same thing with like Kurt Wagner, right?
He was dope in the cartoons. Like Beast was always like one of my favorites.
The cartoon yeah. Beast and Kelsey Grammer is quite accurate.
Yeah.
My biggest miss in X-Men, Vinnie Jones is the Juggernaut.
Oh yeah, that was.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean they made Kane Marco into a British guy.
Yeah.
Don't you know who I am? I'm the Juggernaut, bitch.
Yeah. Like, really? Well, it's also quite horrible because his voice was a lot higher than how he looked.
Yeah.
You know, like you know those awkward moments where, like. The voice doesn't match.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, yeah, right? Yeah, like yeah. where like a big guy comes up and he speaks and you're like, hold on a second.
What yeah. did
you say? Right, like,
well, they do that. You know what I did? David Beckham. I didn't realize his voice was so high.
David Beckham's got the worst voice ever.
People always talk about
him. Yeah. They're like David really Beckham's
attracted until he speaks.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
the second he speaks, that all illusion, all the illusion of sexiness just goes right out the window. David Beckham is a perfect example of this. Another one that's a kind of an example is Chris Pratt. Chris Pratt, for the way he looks, has a lot higher
okay.
kind of an alto
yeah.
than you expect.
That. Okay, I didn't think about that before, but I can see that.
Yeah, Chris Pratt is like, if you listen to Chris Pratt speak, you go, he's just, his voice is just too pleasant and high for the way he looks.
Yeah.
And the, I think for Juggernaut, they completely missed on that. Not only the accent, but just the, here he is looking like he's 6'8"
uh-huh.
in all metal and buff. He's like,
you know,
I'm the Juggernaut, bitch.
Yeah, you know, yeah, but they needed it. I mean, they need to redo all those characters because, like, even then, like the depiction of Colossus in those movies,
mm-hmm.
as yeah, opposed to the depiction of Colossus in Deadpool.
Uh-huh. Now that right? was like, a great Colossus, I thought. Yeah. That was a phenomenal.
Don't forget to eat your granola bar.
Yeah, it's just like he's like this, like he is this good-natured big. Just the big taxi
scene,
guy, right?
Please
yeah.
cover up the taxi scene where he's yeah. drinking. Like, yeah. He's got this little cup that he's yeah. drinking from, and he's like all scrunched in the back. Like, I thought that was such a great Colossus. It really fit with what I had imagined because I was always quite disappointed. We've talked about Colossus is one of your favorites.
Yeah, I love Colossus.
Right? He's always been he's a fan favorite because of his personality.
Yeah.
Though he's controversial too.
Yeah, well, the whole Kitty Pryde yeah, underage
she's,
business.
She's underage.
They changed that.
They did.
But
they
it was, yeah. like it was.
And in the originals, he was just some big dude.
Yeah, just rocking yeah. around the big old TV.
With the TV.
Yeah. I don't know what she's.
I can help you. Like, I think that's his only line.
He literally, they're like, go!
I can help like, you.
Yeah. Have you seen Rogue?
Nope.
Whereas I thought in Deadpool, I went, this is Colossus.
Yeah, no, you know, that makes perfect sense.
My favorite casting choice of any Marvel thing ever was David Tennant as the Purple Man in Jessica Jones.
So he actually plays it very differently from the comic book's but Purple Man.
I loved
Man.
It. It was so wonderfully done. Like, that's my favorite.
Killigan, or whatever his name is. Killborn, or whatever his name is.
No, it's Kill something.
Kill something, whatever.
Yeah.
He's actually different in the comic books. He's a little sleazier.
He's sleazy as hell in this.
No, he's got. There's a slight refinement to him in this. Yeah,
he's got that criminal mastermind.
Where he's got this yeah. criminal mastermind thing. Whereas, in the comic books, he doesn't. He's just kind of a petty theft.
Yeah.
The second thing that he has is he's much more obsessed here. Whereas in the comic books, he just does what he wants and he gets away with it. Where he in the comic books, he's not obsessed.
No.
Here he play. He I think in many
Kilgrave,
ways.
By the way.
Kilgrave, that's what it is. Yeah. Kilgrave does a phenomenal job of. Or I think David Tennant does a phenomenal job of adding depth to a character that doesn't have a lot of depth in the comic books. This is sometimes what has to happen, right? Is that certain characters don't have a lot of depth in comic books or in books, and right?
Uh-huh.
We see this with Game of Thrones. Certain Game of Thrones characters
have
no depth in the book, and they've done a good job by adding them.
Yeah.
One of the few things the show does right. The rest of it's shit.
Like Eamon?
And Kilgrave is an example of that. In mm-hmm. the comic books, he doesn't have that. He's a thief. He does what he does to Jessica Jones is from the comic books. But there isn't the same obsession.
With Jessica?
He's mm-hmm. much more in control, and uh-huh. he's much more... He's just after what he wants.
But see, like, now, like, anytime I think of Kilgrave, I'm going to think of David Tennant. Yeah.
Well, it's because David Tennant is such a phenomenally compelling... He's a very compelling actor. Mm-hmm. It's like you end up getting kind of mesmerized by his performances, whatever he does, whether he's mm-hmm. the Doctor or he's Kilgrave or whatever. He kind of draws you in. Or even if
he's in Harry Potter for 3 minutes.
He's in Harry Potter for 3 minutes. It kind of draws you in. So he does a really good job in regards
but to that. But that and Tom Hiddleston as Loki. I can't see Loki as anyone else but Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah. He plays him more Shakespearean.
Mm-hmm. That's true. But the thing is, it's Tom Hiddleston. It's Loki. It's not Loki in the comic books.
He's much more Shakespeare.
But they do a good enough job that it's like you can't imagine anyone else playing. Well,
Hemsworth as Thor is phenomenal.
I rewatched The Mask with Jim Carrey, and the mask that he puts on is the mask of Loki.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a second.
Yeah, Loki in the movies is more Shakespearean. There's a
little Kenneth Branagh type of Iago to him.
You
could
definitely see, because Kenneth Branagh directs the first one.
Yeah.
You could see that in there.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure when it comes to... I think for me, you said McAvoy and Fassbender.
I said that.
But I think McKellen and Stewart.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, too. It's like, because Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart, because their chemistry is so good as actual best friends in real life.
Yeah. You see it in the movie.
It translates so well.
So in the worst of them all, the third one, there's a moment where right before Xavier dies, a lot of people miss.
Yeah.
Magneto actually yells out, Jean, don't.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And it's like a really quick moment, but it really speaks, or where he pauses and he looks at the... And this is McKellen. McKellen has a phenomenal... He's like Anthony Hopkins, is that he does this great thing with his eyes, mm-hmm. right? They're either twinkling or they're glistening. He does something where he pauses and he looks at this wheelchair, and it's like there's a flash of resignation.
Yeah.
Of not sadness, but like a line has been crossed. And I can't go back.
And then you see Ian McKellen in like an interview on Graham Norton's show, and you realize
he's
the biggest queen.
And I think
those
two.
Did you say he's the biggest what?
The queen. He's like he's like a kind of a queen.
I thought you said something else. Like, that's fucked up.
I think those two are the best cast, and because of their chemistry.
No, but I don't disagree with that. But I said the best thing that they've done with the new like. It's X-Men is Fassbender and McAvoy.
Well, they just speaking of casting, actually, they cast Milana Vantroub as Squirrel Girl
in the new. I know her. I know
she's from the AT&T commercial.
Oh, I love her. I follow her on Instagram. She's very politically.
The Ukrainian chick, not the Ukrainian. It was Uzbekistan.
Ooh, I don't remember where she. I know, but she did a whole lot of the refugee. She did a lot of refugee
she's
stuff.
She's from somewhere in that region.
Yeah,
so they're doing the Marvel the new Warriors show,
uh-huh.
and it's gonna be a comedic thing. So Squirrel Girl was a huge cult favorite, right? She defeats everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And you got guys on the New Mutants like Speedball, which mm-hmm. is which is weird because he's the reason why Civil War starts.
I thought that was Nitro. Johnny Nitro.
No, because Speedball goes after Nitro. And then because of that, all those mutants die. Right? So he's in there, and there's also another character called like the there's a character in there who's like he's invincible, but like he literally he gets killed in every single panel of comic books, right? So like they're doing a kind of a comedic thing, and I'm interested to see how this works out because it's like doing something like New Mutants is like Guardians of the Galaxy. You're like, is this where Marvel gets too arrogant to think that it's too big to fail?
Yeah,
right. And I'm wondering about this because like I like Squirrel Girl, I like all that stuff, right? But it's like, is it going to translate the way that it should, you know?
I think one of their examples of that arrogance was definitely Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
I mean, they got away with it.
Yeah, but the question is, how many times are they going to be able to get away with it before they can't?
Iron Fist. A lot of people did not like Iron Fist. Of all the Marvel TV shows, Iron Fist was like the one
horribly
that was poorly received.
Orientalist.
Yeah, it was the most poorly received one. Everyone loved Daredevil. Everyone loved Jessica Jones. Everyone fucking loved Luke Cage.
Yeah.
Hated Iron Fist.
I really did like Luke Cage a lot.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I was going to say, that's the one that people hated the most.
I'm going to just kind of wrap up the Spider-Man talk. With the one thing that I really appreciate about that movie is that they kept Spider-Man, they kept Peter Parker within kind of the confines of New York, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like they offered him a spot in the Avengers and all this other stuff, but he turned it down because he wanted to be the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Which I really appreciated a lot because, number one, Marvel movies take it to this Galactus, Ego the Living, you know, like they have to like consistently take it to these new levels, which is kind of ridiculous. But also what I also appreciate about it is when in the beginning of the movie, he's talking about how he's doing things to protect people from street crime. You know, like there's a guy who stole a bike, he takes it, right? He talked about how a lady bought him a churro.
He gave her directions.
Because he gave her directions, right? And I think it's important because in terms of these superhero movies, especially one where it involves someone so young, it really does, it kind of shows that, you know, it doesn't need to be these huge, you know, giant efforts of like fighting off the Chitauri to be a hero. It's like he's doing everyday things.
Well, I think in many ways, if Marvel is going to save itself,
yeah,
it needs to go back to its roots of crime fighting at the local level. Spider-Man was a New York crime fighter fighting petty thieves more often than not who end up having some anthropomorphic, but they're all doing what?
Yeah.
Robbing banks.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
You know what I love?
This is they need to go back to that because the more they focus on the kind of global threats, they're forgetting, they end up becoming abstract.
Yeah. That's why I appreciate Spider-Man this time around.
They paid homage to people talking about how Spider-Man would suck in the suburbs. So he's running, chasing like some criminals, and he tries to shoot his webs and there's nothing for it to attach. He's like, well, this sucks. So you have to start running after him and then jumping around. I thought that was funny.
Before we end, we should also mention as kind of a final wrap up in regards to kind of casting. The end of Doctor Who. Doctor Who, the season is over, and it is the end of the 12th Doctor as we know it. So Peter Capaldi will be leaving. We don't know who is going to be replacing.
It's Ginger, hopefully.
Peter Capaldi, but I can tell you that I will be deeply sad. He's been my favorite Doctor.
Tennant's always been my favorite.
Capaldi stole the show for me.
I feel like it took a while for people to get warm to Capaldi.
Yeah, he had to find his voice, but he did a phenomenal job. I love this Doctor. Darker, more sharp.
I love
him. Great, brilliant. On that note, why don't you take us out, Diz?
Yeah, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/currentlynerdy, on Twitter, @currentlynerdy, Instagram, currentlynerdy on there, Tumblr, currentlynerdy.tumblr.com. YouTube, search Currently Nerdy on YouTube and you'll find our old videos on there. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. We got a new review from Nas Nerd. So thank you, Nas Nerd, for giving us a review. It's pretty dope of you. He gave us 5 stars. So if you could give us 5 stars, we'll give you a shout out too. Make sure you subscribe and make all your friends subscribe. And if you want to get a hold of us individually, you can. V, how can I get a hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at VTran214. That's VY. TRAN214. You'll find me on my website at thesandwichslayer.com. Ali,
you can catch me online either on my website at alialomi.com or on Twitter and Instagram at AAOLOMI or on our sister podcast Head on History, where I discuss all sorts of nerdy history stuff. Diz,
you can find me everywhere at Dizbullet, DizBullah.
For everyone here at Currently Nerdy, thank you for tuning in, and remember, stay smart, sexy nerds.
And we love you.